You've just tuned into Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Welcome back to Beyond Your Past, the podcast that focuses on inspiring you to move forward from what's been holding you back in life. Each week, we talk with clinicians, coaches, mental health advocates, and those who've overcome tremendous odds and now use their journey to encourage you throughout yours. I'm Matt Pappas, certified coach and NLP master practitioner, alongside Joanne Suppressi, author, certified coach, and hypnotherapist. In addition to talking with amazing guests on the show, we share practical tips and insightful strategies that empower and encourage you to break free from anxiety, self-doubt, and the negative mindsets that keep you stuck. This is your place to feel validated and encouraged as you take your life back and live free from your past. Greetings, friend, and welcome back to the podcast. Before we get started, we want to take a second to thank a couple of incredible organizations. INLP Center, offering world-class online neurolinguistic programming and life coach training to people in over 70 countries. If you've ever considered becoming a coach or simply want more information on their programs, just head over to inlpcenter.org. And to Daily Recovery Support, interactive, daily group calls in a safe atmosphere for survivors of complex trauma, equipping you with the skills and information you can use every single day in your healing journey. Learn more about this affordable resource and get signed up at cptsdfoundation.org. And a special thank you to you. We appreciate you listening to the podcast and making us part of your weekly playlist. You all are the reason we do this show, and we wouldn't be here without you. If you enjoy these podcasts, please consider sharing this episode with one person who might find it helpful, and maybe leaving us a review on your favorite podcast app. That would be awesome, and we would definitely appreciate it. Also, if you'd like to help support this podcast for as little as 99 cents per month, you can just head over to beyondyourpastradio.com and click on the support link at the top of the page. Your generous support of any amount helps keep us to continue bringing you new episodes every single week. So today we're talking with author, artist, and survivor Larry Rule. Larry is a great friend of the podcast, and we're happy to have the opportunity to chat with him again. He joined us originally back in episode 72, which I'll link in the show notes, and today we're talking about some of the more difficult aspects and the rewards that come in the aftermath of sharing your story openly through writing and speaking. You can find his book, Breaking the Rules, on Amazon and his website, breakingtherules.com. That's rules spelled R-U-H-L-S. And of course, I'll link that in the show notes as well. We talk about his personal struggle of the family dynamic when you write about childhood trauma and how some may support you, some may not, and other times you'll get that support, but only to a certain degree. We discuss dealing with triggers and keeping up with self-care, especially when new memories arise or a challenge you thought you worked through now resurfaces. Larry also shares about the importance of being open to new self-care strategies and coping skills, even when you have a go-to set of strategies that usually work quite well. Finally, we talk about being fully present in your body, what that means, and how Larry works through the challenge of being in tune with what he's feeling at any given time. All this and more during our incredible chat with Larry Rule, starting right now. So, hey, Larry, welcome back to Beyond Your Past, dude. It's great to talk to you again. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm doing great, and it's, of course, great to be back.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. You joined the show quite a while back, and I'll be sure and link that in the show notes for everybody to check out if they have not heard your podcast. The show that you did the first time still gets a lot of listens, gets comments on it. So you definitely are making a mark on a lot of people, of course, as you already know, with your book and everything that you're doing. And so why don't we, before we get started and talking about what life has been since your book and how you're balancing the triggers and you know, kind of coming out publicly with your story and all that good stuff, a follow-up to the last podcast. Before we do that, if you want to take a second to introduce yourself and say hello, that would be great.
Absolutely. My name is Larry Rule, and I live in the Hudson Valley in New York. And I wrote my story of recovering from childhood sexual abuse, and it was published and came out a year and a half ago. And since then, it's been a whole new world that's opened up, and it's just really nice and grounding to be back and talking to you again.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. So actually, why don't we just kind of dive into it right now, and you can share with us, you know, maybe like a brief recap of the book and then dive into kind of what, you know, what life has been like and coming out with your story, perhaps some challenges you faced or anything along that line. And then we'll get into kind of daily life and triggers and that kind of stuff later on.
Sure. It's a great opportunity for me to talk about some of the things that, that I couldn't talk about with anyone, as it was unfolding and as the book was nearing its release date and as things were unfolding. It was like the 3 months before the book was coming out, it just life was totally chaotic. It was, I was very close to my mother-in-law and she was dying and died, without being able to read it. But also at the same time that the final edits of the book were due. So I was literally back and forth to in and out of hospitals and trying to write these edits and trying to balance out my life and dealing with, you know, accepting the fact that I was coming out so publicly with this deeply personal story. So I go through that, and then literally the book comes out in February of 2018, and 2 weeks later my house sold. So I was facing a move while all of the book readings and podcasts and interviews and all that stuff were being scheduled. So it was such a crazy time and such a vulnerable time. And it taught me so much about resilience and what we have to do to sort of take care of ourselves and, you know, as trauma survivors and anyone that carries shame or secrets. So the buildup was pretty intense. And then of course there's the actual coming out with the story. And, you know, putting yourself publicly in front of a room, doing book readings and reading about what happened to you as a child. In my case, I was a young boy when I was sexually abused by my father. You know, you're really met with not only the energy of a room and people's own trauma, but you're then met with their questions and their feedback and their own observations of you as you're sitting up there. So it really became sort of an on-the-spot moment a few times, and really taught me a lot about how to work through some of those uncomfortable moments as a survivor.
Yeah, it definitely does. There's nothing like sharing your story to make you feel completely uncomfortable, especially in the beginning, and then you're dealing with all of the questions and the, oh my God, I never knew, or, you know, and just basically being that unbelievably vulnerable to, you know, put your story out in a book or to share it publicly in a form of some sort. And so I'm curious, since you've written the book, and of course, you know what life like is now, do you have any regrets or anything you wish you maybe would have done differently? Or are you kind of cool with how everything's playing out? Just understanding that this whole healing thing takes on kind of a mind of its own from time to time.
That is such a great question. And it is definitely something I checked in with a few times, you know, as I did receive some feedback that was challenging and I did feel vulnerable, especially just in my own community, because I was very good at keeping my life very much together, at least outwardly, sort of outward appearances. And I did receive a lot of that, you know, I never knew and, you know, had I known and I'm silly. But I think that, you know, as I was going through sort of the public part, I really did check in a few times, and you know, I had and have to this day no regrets at all about sharing my story, because the people that it did touch and the feedback I've received from them and some of the work that I've done now as a result of putting the book out has been some of the most rewarding experiences that I've had as a human being. And you know, in looking back at it, you know, I feel really grounded in knowing that I have no regrets coming out so publicly. You know, there were a few instances that were challenging or have been challenging, but nothing that made me second guess my decision to come out with my story.
That's a great thing to hear, because sometimes, I mean, I'm a big proponent of telling your story in whatever way that feels right to you, and, you know, not being ashamed and everything that comes with being a survivor. But it also, it is that sometimes people will share their story and they get so much backlash or they get so much like especially from family or close friends. And then they wonder, man, maybe I shouldn't have done this. And so it's good that you're able to see this for all of the amazing benefits that it not only gives your healing, but of course, everybody who reads your book or hears you speak, to be able to see somebody that is incredibly brave to be like, you know what? I went through hell and back and I'm still here and I'm still fighting and I'm, you know, here to share my story and give other people hope. And I'm sure everybody that's read your book or everybody that you've come in contact with is really just inspired by you being so open and just being like, hey, this is who I am. This is what I went through. And more importantly, this is how I'm using my experience to really kind of help others.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that that's been the majority of the feedback is, you know, as you know, some of the things that I said in the book, you know, were really things that were deeply personal. I put myself out on the line a little bit, but those were the things that I knew people would relate to. How survivors act or how they function in life and some of the things that we've done that we're not particularly proud of or the way we've acted as a result of what happened to us, those are the things I felt were really important to share because those are the things that are going to reach somebody who feels that they're alone. And that was the one thing that my hope was to reach people that felt like they were alone in their experiences or were still carrying shame. And, you know, the only quote unquote family that I was concerned about was my sister and my niece, who both were very upfront when I decided to publish the story, who both said, we love you, we support you, we believe you, but we are not going to read your book. So that gave me a sort of a path to freedom a little bit in coming out, because I did not have to worry about that aspect. I did hear from a long lost second cousin of my mom's who in her, as she calls it, her vintage years, Googled me, heard about the book, not only bought it, but read it and then reached out to offer her support and her love. And that was a deeply profound moment for me. And that was more recent. And it just showed me that you just never can tell who's going to come forward and who's going to say, I love you and I'm sorry. And, you know, I just actually made a trip to visit her and it was incredibly healing in a way that I could not have anticipated. So that was definitely a big plus, big benefit out of writing the story.
Yeah. And I think I remember seeing those pictures on Facebook. And I know that was a pretty cool
That's
post
right.
that you put up when you went. Yeah, exactly. And you know what? It's interesting because and you mentioned shame, which we'll get into here in a second. But when you mentioned about how some of the family members were, you know, like, hey, I support you. I love you, but I'm not going to read your book. And that can be, depending on how you're able to receive that, can be something positive or it could be something really mm-hmm. negative. And I think, you know, a lot of times people will support us, but they may not necessarily read a book because the pain is too hurtful or because they don't understand it or because they want to keep the memories that they have of you or that person and kind of compartmentalized. And so, you know, I think everybody who's ever told their story has probably received some kind of similar from a family or friend of, you know, hey, we're behind you, tell your story. But I really want to kind of keep it at arm's length a little bit. I don't know if that's something you want to address a little bit, because I know for me, initially, that would have been something that kind of maybe caused me to go down into a bit of a spiral and kind of a shame yeah. thing. But ultimately, mm-hmm. if you take it in the spirit in which it was given from somebody with love, it's not necessarily a mm-hmm. bad thing.
This is one of the reasons why I have so much respect for you and love you so much for what you do, because this is an insight that that is not an everyday insight. And you bring up so many great points in this conversation. And yes, you know, I did have some moments that were hurtful with family, you know, extended family, chosen family, however you want to define family, who basically said, you know, I want to read it, but it's just too hard. You know, that some of those responses were challenging. The other thing that happened is when people say, I don't know why you feel it necessary to share all of this. Why would you want to expose yourself this way? And, you know, some of those reactions were also challenging because I thought, well, you know, the immediate judgment part of me says, well, you don't get it. But as I soften, I say, yes, you know, I understand that some people cannot ever share what they carry. But, you know, in doing that and putting yourself out there and, you know, in the writing format and putting out a book, I learned very quickly that it was going to be one of the most humbling experiences. And let me tell you, there have been many times that I've had to completely shed and drop my ego completely and just say, this is how it's going to be. And, you know, any of the hurt feelings or disappointed feelings that came up for me, I tried very hard to deal with them as they come up, to not carry them, because I didn't want to add anything else to carry. You know what I mean? Just keep shedding any of the negativity. But yeah, I mean, everything that you just said, I experienced in some form. You know, people saying, I love you, support you, not going to read it for whatever reason. Sometimes it was, you know, what was attached to that was, you know, I don't want to know. And I literally had somebody, I want to only know the Larry that I've met and that I've had a chance to get to know. I don't want to know this other side of you. That's tough to hear. You know, those moments are tough to hear, because I am who I am now as a result of everything that has happened.
Yeah, and that couldn't absolutely be extremely tough to hear. And I think the amount of healing that you do can also help you take this, take the comments or the feedback and perhaps a different way. Basically understand that not everybody's going to get it. Not everybody understands it. Right. You know, not everybody has the capability to see that side of us that is so vulnerable. And then that was so hurt. And that was so, you know, I mean, just broken for so long. And, you know, I think, like I said before, I've had some kinds of similar feedback, and I really had to understand that, hey, you know, I'm not writing this for somebody else. Right. I mean, right. I'm glad that it helps other people and, you know, I hope that it helps other people, but I'm writing this to get my story out there because I'm not ashamed. And the way I tell my story is the way I tell my story. So, you know, you don't necessarily have to like it. I would like it if you did, but ultimately being okay with some people supporting us and not, and, or kind of drawing a line, I think is something big, because if we're not careful, we can cause us to go down to this spiraling shame of, oh my God, you know, I shouldn't do this. Everybody's against me now. And we can kind of shift on the extreme thinking type of side and really start to go down a bad path, but really just give people the benefit of the doubt that not everybody's going to get it. And that's just totally okay.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, I certainly know, and you know, like, you know, my book is not for everyone. And anyone that said, you know, ask me about reading it, or would I be hurt if they didn't read it? And my answer was always no. I always said that if you feel it's going to help you in some way, then read it. And if you feel it's going to be triggering or upsetting in any other way, then don't. You know, it's completely like that for me. And you know, the people that have reached out who said that they felt alone, I mean, that was really profound, especially hearing from people who I knew in elementary school and high school, who said, you know, I'm reading this and I knew you then, and if only we had known how much we had in common. You know, those kind of comments and that kind of feedback was just unbelievable and very moving, and again, add another layer of healing. It also, of course, reflects on just how toxic shame and sexual abuse is, and just how insidious it is and how common it is. And that was one of the other things about coming out publicly, is just realizing just how not alone I am. And, you know, the numbers are staggering.
Yeah, the numbers are staggering, and just unfortunately, in just a horrible way. And, you know, the stats of 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys, I mean, it's true. And I mean, in my opinion, you know, those stats have been around for quite a while. It's probably worse than that, unfortunately. But when you take a stand and say, hey, this is what happened to me, and I'm going to tell my story and not be ashamed of it, when you realize like how much support is out there, because, and I've told this story before, I had no idea that there was a community out there of people who went through what I went through. I mean, I just didn't, right? Like, I thought I was on an island, I was all alone, or this was something that, you know, nobody else ever dealt with. And that's just kind of, you know, what we believe until you are shown otherwise, that there are millions upon millions upon millions of survivors all over the world who have been through similar things. And, you know, everybody's at different parts of their life, and some can tell their story and some can't, and some are in the middle of it right now. But, you know, I think that's just why it's so important to, you know, for everybody who can, to just reach out online to, you know, a Facebook group or a Twitter chat or you know, a local support group or whatever it is. And when you see how many people are out there going through all the same stuff you do, you're like, all right, I know this sucks and I hate it and I don't want to do it, but at least there's, you know, kind of a misery loves company kind of thing. And you can feel like at least you've got somebody out there who gets what it means to be where I am or to be where I was.
Yes. And, you know, to start to find that community of people who are in different stages of healing and ways that you can have conversations and talk about how you're healing now and things that you're doing and, you know, the ways that you find deeper healing. I mean, those are all of the, that's like the gold, you know, that's where I just love being. And that's where I am now, of just nestled in that spot of having those conversations and saying, all right, you know, what have you done for yourself today, this week, this year, that's made a difference in your healing journey? And I love being part of that community and having those conversations.
Yeah, because that's not definitely something you can ask yourself when you're deep in the middle of trauma recovery or, you know, working
definitely
with a therapist
not.
Or anything else. You're like, you know, I mean, most days you're just trying to go through life or you're just pretty much ignoring everything because you don't want to deal with it because you think, oh, it happened 10, 20, 30 years ago, whatever it was. It doesn't affect me anymore. And so, of course, you know, you don't necessarily put two and two together until you start healing.
Right.
So when you get to a point when you can, where you can be that self-aware and say, okay, what have I done for myself today to help me, or, you know, to help my healing journey, or how have I encouraged others, or look back at all of the wins or the challenges I've overcome and be like, yeah, you know what? I'm making some strides here, and be okay with giving yourself some credit. Cause normally that's not easy to do.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, you're right. I mean, I remember like thinking about that and just looking back, you know, 5, 10 years of what it was like when I was in those earliest days with my therapist and uncovering and unfolding and untangling. I mean, it was just awful. And if anyone even suggested, well, what have you done for yourself this week? I can't imagine my response. It would not have been pleasant because it was at that time where, like you said, it was just, how am I going to get through today? How am I going to get through in the next, you know, the time in between therapy sessions? That was always my gauge. Like, what do I do in between therapy sessions and what kind of tools can I employ to just keep me at the time, just keep me somewhat steady? So I'm happy to be at this side now of where I'm at.
Oh, absolutely. I can't tell you how many times I will leave a therapist's office and be like, okay, I've got 48 hours or 72 hours until I go back again. What am
right.
I going to do to get through these next 3 days until I can go back for another session or whatever it was? And so you're right. Life oftentimes revolving around or involves when can I get back to therapy? When can I keep dealing with this? How am I going to make it through the next 3 days? And so yeah, your life revolves around therapy, and that's totally fine, right? I mean, you have to kind of go through that
absolutely.
Stage to really kind of get to the point where you are now, right? And into kind of that, you know,
yeah.
that thriving zone of, I've been through the deep work and now I can really see, you know, the benefits of my healing shining through. And that kind of transitions into the other thing that I wanted to talk a little bit about with is, you know, you've been at this healing thing for a while now. You wrote a book, you've done speaking engagements and all kinds of things. How well, or how difficult, I guess, maybe is it in life right now to balance triggers and maybe, you know, and balance self-care and balance everyday life and, you know, deal with maybe a flashback or a twinge of a memory that comes back now and then. And
yeah. And, you know, I think that, in terms of triggers, you know, I'm one of those people who doesn't believe that they will ever fully go away. I think as a trauma survivor, they're going to be around for the rest of my life in some form or another, but at each step of healing and recovery, we're at different places and we're at a different capacity to handle them. So the one, you know, one thing I want to say as a follow-up to what we just talked about is I am very much still indeed working with a therapist. You know, that has not changed. And as long as she continues to work, I will remain engaged in that process because it is definitely something that still keeps me grounded and steady to this day. But, you know, when part of stepping out a little more publicly with the book and, you know, doing some speaking, and I've chosen very carefully of where I'm doing those things. You know, I spoke publicly at a conference for Healing Together conference for people that suffer from DID, multiple personality disorder, dissociative identity disorder. And it was a challenge that I stepped into, and it was the first time that I felt as though I had truly found my sense of community. So while I had some challenges and nerves around sharing my story that way, I was met with this reaction that I found so healing. And, you know, some of my other work, you know, I'm involved in, you know, 2 12-step groups, and both of them still offer me the support that I need to help balance out some other triggers that still come up. But I would say for me now at this stage, when I get triggered, I have a memory, I have a flashback, I have stuff that comes up. For me, I take myself into my studio and I focus on some artwork. It just remains one of the best tools that I have to deal with what comes up. It may take me a day or so to realize it's what I need to do. I'm one of those people that the solution can be right in front of me and I will not see it for my own stubbornness or my own belligerence. But I do tend to get there. I get there faster now than I used to. But for me, turning to some creative endeavor is really the answer to any sort of trigger or flashback that comes up. And, you know, it's just a part of the day to day, and it's really challenging. The other thing I can say is, you know, like we spoke about earlier, having a community of fellow survivors that are in different stages of their healing process and recovery, who are willing to speak with me personally about where they are in their journey, I find really helpful. Because we just get real with each other on another level that I find helpful. And so that kind of work and balance is really how I'm navigating that part of where I'm at now.
And I think that is a tribute to the work that you're doing. And, you know, like we talk about this a lot of times on the daily coaching calls that I do with CPTSD Foundation, is when you get to a point where you know what you got to do when you're triggered, that's healing right there, right? Like healing is not the absence of triggers. It is never going to be the absence of triggers. Just like you said, you know, the triggers are always going to be there because you cannot control anything in life. I mean, there is very little in your life and obviously outside of you that you can control. And so, but what you can control is how you react, how much, you know, self-care you do, how you work through the shame and reach out for help and all these things. Because when you are, you know, either, you know, have never started your healing work, or you're deep in the middle of work on a particularly bad memory or circumstance or whatever the case may be, you're not always aware enough to know that. I mean, you may know that you're being triggered, but you have no idea what to do. You're like, okay, now what? I'm stuck. I'm screwed. Right. I'm dissociating. I'm having a flashback. I'm done. And so, you know, you will kind of mentally or physically just check out for hours, days, weeks at a time, whatever it is, until eventually you kind of get your sea legs again and get back moving. But when you can be that proactive and say, hey, I'm triggered right now, something came up, or also too, you know, I'm heading into a potentially difficult situation, such as, you know, speaking in front of other people, that may bring up some memories I'm not sure, you know, I've dealt with before, or maybe something new will come up. So I better take time to be proactive with my self-care. Those are the kind of things that I think really kind of give you the sense of, hey, I'm doing something right. I'm on the right track here because I know how to take care of myself, and I know what my triggers are and how I'll usually respond.
That's right. And, you know, I think that, you know, continuing to find new ways, or at least being open to find new ways to deal with triggers, has also been, you know, a real gift. I mean, it used to be, and you know this, it's part of my story, but it used to be I would get triggered or I'd have flashbacks, and my first resort was to turn to a drink. And I had deep fear, and it was a very challenging time for me when I was first getting sober, because I was left without my main coping mechanism. It's like, how do I deal with this without just numbing out to alcohol? So the last 6 years of my sobriety have been spent like, okay, can I be okay feeling all of this? And what do I do now? Like, what do I do as a sober person to deal with the flashbacks and the triggers and interactions and things that might trip me up in my day? So continuing to find ways to heal and to just be present is the ongoing work. You know, I'm just now, I don't want to say just, it sounds like I'm judging it, but maybe I am a little bit, but I am finally this year focusing a little bit more with being in my body, something I've never been good at, something that I, you know, have struggled with, of, you know, being out of my body and disconnected. And I'm slowly finding ways that feel comfortable and safe for me to actually be in my body. And, you know, I'm finding that that's just really helping me at this stage. And something that I've wanted to do and I've thought about and I've heard, certainly heard about in terms of models of recovery, but just not something I was ready for until now. And I definitely have to take it slow. I've tried some other things before that haven't worked, and but I'm finding I feel like I'm on a good path now in this new way of just finding other ways to be still and to be in my body.
That's probably some of the most difficult work you can possibly do. And I fully admit I'm not very good at it either. So you are in good company, man. I mean, I'm telling you that there's healing in that. But when you can be fully present in like a non-judgmental way, like with who you are as a person and physically in your body, that is, oh my God, that's so hard. Because there's so much shame that you have to work through. And then, you know, you mentioned too about making new coping skills, and you know, like you can have an arsenal of coping skills that is just top notch, everything great, but not everything works all the time. And sometimes things kind of, you know, like their effectiveness diminishes, right? So you always have to be trying new things, new ways to help, to learn, to cope with self-care strategies, whatever it is, because sooner or later, what you're doing isn't going to work. I mean, believe me, I know firsthand the stuff I do doesn't always work. And I'm like, well, shit, now what am I going to do? So, you know, having a list of literally written out stuff to go to or being open as you are right now with trying new things is hugely important.
Yes. And, you know, I remember, you know, in the beginning with dealing with anxiety and transitions and medication and, you know, people telling me, you know, go to the gym, get on the treadmill. And I remember in the beginning of just how challenging that was. I would get on the treadmill. I'd start to, you know, work up to a slow jog. And the second my adrenaline started to kick up and my heart started racing, kid you not, the tears would start. And there I would be at the gym on the treadmill and I'd start to weep. And I'd have to stop and leave because I just, the connection to my body and the trauma was so strong that the second that I just started getting into it, the tears would come. And it took me a very long time. And still, you know, I still struggle sometimes at the gym doing that. I'm much better off taking a slow walk. I mean, I'm just learning these things about myself of what really works and what doesn't. But it's fascinating of just how connected it all is and how we can react and what can feel safe and what suddenly doesn't feel so safe. And being able to discern what those things are and giving yourself permission to say, you know what, this doesn't work for me. I need to try something else.
The peer pressure that can be there when somebody says, you know, hey, this is a great strategy, or, you know, this works, or you have a therapist that says this works for almost everybody. And then you try it and it doesn't work for you. And you're like, oh man, now the shame starts to come in. I'm broken. Yeah. There's something wrong with me. And that whole spiral can just take you down to another dark place, because then you have all this, you know, all these old memories of stuff that maybe you even thought you worked through. And somebody says that, you try this new, you know, modality or whatever. And you're like, it's just not doing it for me. And then you have to really, that's where you can really also see the benefits of your healing to say, hey, I tried it. It didn't work. So what? Like, you know, there's 7 billion people on this planet. There's 7 billion different ways to heal. If yours doesn't work for me, so what? Mine might not work for you, but that's totally cool, because the end result is what you're after.
Exactly right. You know, and I even find that as I'm, you know, now exploring, you know, going deeper into my artwork and making collage. And it's like, it's similar. I'm trying a lot of different things and I'm seeing what lands and what resonates and what doesn't. You know, what method am I drawn to? And, you know, if I try something and I'm struggling with it, is it because I'm resisting or is it because it just isn't working? So I'm looking at that as very tied to my healing and recovery. Every time I step into the studio and trying to, you know, not beat myself up if something doesn't work, and saying, all right, so this doesn't work. There are 50,000 other things that you can do. And I'm really finding that that it's all sort of working together in this big sort of tandem motion of seeing what works in the studio, what seeing works, you know, for me, and finding a way to just, you know, take a new step the next day.
Yeah, that is an excellent point. When you say to yourself, is this not working because I'm resisting it and maybe it's something I should continue to try, or is it just not working? And that just simply comes with trial and error and awareness, right? I mean, you know, I always say this whole healing thing, it's a bunch of up and down trial and error things of seeing what works and what doesn't. And just because you're healing for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years or whatever, doesn't mean that you've got it down to a science necessarily. And you can still try things and you may find that there's a self-care strategy or a coping skill that might be really good for you, but you can't seem to make it work, or it's not giving you results because there's something else that comes up that you now realize you got to work through. And so exactly. That can be incredibly difficult to sit with, because you're like, well, damn, like I've been through therapy. I wrote a book. I speak to people. I'm taking care of myself. I'm doing this, that, and the other thing. Why is this coming up now? And, you know, I did a podcast a couple of years ago with somebody who just, I remember her saying, she sat in a therapist's office and just said, we've done this already. I've already worked through this. Why is it coming up again? Oh my God.
I can totally relate to that.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes just, that happens.
It does. And, you know, I mean, it's just like, you know, when you're living with, you know, being a survivor, there's no telling what's going to trigger you or what memory hasn't surfaced that's been pushed down for any number of reasons. So being aware and being open and being connected with yourself helps you, you know, be kind to yourself as you work through those, and also be aware that, hey, maybe I need to go talk to a therapist again, you know, if I've been away from for a while, and maybe there's something here, maybe there's not, but I should be aware and proactive enough to go seek it out just in case something comes up.
Yeah. Perfect example. I was off of medications to treat my anxiety for a few years now. And this time last year, wouldn't you know it, what was felt seemingly out of the blue, of course, I don't think it really was, but I start having panic attacks again. I couldn't believe it. And I felt so frustrated. I thought, what is this? Why now? Like, why is this coming back up? And I have to go spend time on this again. And I was asking all the same questions that you just brought up. And I was really struggling with it. And the truth is, for whatever reason, I needed a little help. And it was exactly what I needed. And it was like, I could continue to suffer through them, or I could, you know, work very carefully and with a doctor that I trust to come up with a solution. And I did, and it was temporary, and it was not a big deal, and it was something that I clearly needed to work through, and I did. But of course, at the time when it first started happening, I immediately went in backward spiral and thought, you know, all of those things. Why this again? Why now? Thought I was done with this. All of those things. And once I accepted that it needed to happen, and it was coming out for a reason, then I softened more into the solution.
That is an awesome way to wrap this up, man. Everything you've said is amazing. Being aware and just understanding that, you know, this is that we are all a work in progress, and things are going to come up. And, you know, like you said, for you, it may be something that was temporary. It could just be a memory. It could be something that just happened, a trigger. You're able to work through it now, because, you know, not the least of which reasons is just because simply you have skills and awareness now that, you know, you're not going to just stuff this down and numb it and avoid it. You're going to deal with it. And you find oftentimes that when you deal with something, it goes away a lot quicker than it used to,
which is
a good thing. Definitely a good thing. So before we go, dude, I know this has been amazing. Time always flies, but let us know kind of what you're up to now, any kind of new projects you're working on, anything that we can be on the lookout for.
Great. Yeah. I spent a better part of this year traveling. I got to two different artist residencies to dive a little bit more into my artwork. I was both in Greece and Morocco. And as a result of being at the more recent one in Morocco, I've decided to jump into a new writing project. I haven't really said out loud, so that's starting to slowly unfold. And I continue to speak. I'm speaking again at the Healing Together conference, both in Boston this September and in Orlando in February. That work continues, and you know, I'm finding my balance between speaking, my own artwork, and writing. And I think that I'm feeling like this energy of all of it coming together and moving me forward. So that's what I'm up to, and you know, by this time next year, who knows where I'll be.
That's awesome, man. If anybody has a chance to see you speak, I would definitely encourage it. Where can everybody find you online or on social media?
Yeah, there's social media. I'm on all of them under my name, Larry Rule, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all three. And then there's also a website for the book, breakingtherules.com. And then some of my artwork is on the larryrule.com website as well.
Excellent, man. Always a pleasure to talk to you, brother.
Thank you so much.
We will definitely have you back again, because you have an open invitation, dude.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thanks for listening to Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network.
Information shared on this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should supersede the direction of a medical doctor or any mental health professional. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting app and leave us a review. We would sure appreciate it. Also, please consider sharing this episode with someone who may find it helpful. If you would like more information on working with Matt as your coach, just head over to beyondyourpast.com and schedule your free one-hour chat. If you'd like to learn more about working with Joanne as your coach, please check out joannesuppressi.com and contact her for more information. We're always on the lookout for new guests. If you're interested in joining us on an upcoming episode, just head over to beyondyourpastradio.com and contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Talk to you soon.